Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Today, women are being sidelined, passed over for promotions and raises, and fired when they complain. A Times investigation finds that pregnancy discrimination is rampant inside America's biggest companies. It's Tuesday, June 26th.
So about 6 months ago, there was this explosion of Me Too coverage, and my colleague Jessica Silver-Greenberg and I were at the same time hearing stories of pregnancy discrimination on our beats, and we thought it was something we had to look into.
Natalie Kitroev covers the economy for The Times.
And that's around the time that we came across this woman, Otisha Woolbright.
I was born in Fort Myers, Florida. And then my mom moved me and my brother to Jacksonville, and I was a very young girl.
She grew up in the 80s in Florida.
You know, my mom worked hard. She worked two jobs. She took care of me and my brother. You know, there was never no government assistance or anything like that.
She wasn't wealthy, but she said she had everything she needed.
I mean, I had a pretty decent life growing up as a child. I can't complain.
She started working early as a teenager.
I got a job at KFC.
Then as a server at a diner.
And then from the diner, I transferred to a car wash detailing place.
And after that job, she gets pregnant and has a baby.
That was my first child.
And then she has two more kids. And Otisha is a single mom at this point, and she's looking for something a little more stable, a job that pays better, that comes with benefits, a place where she feels like she can move up the ladder. And one day, she's shopping at Walmart.
And I was walking around, and I saw my friend, and I was like, hey, how you doing? And she was like, yeah. I was like, since then you've been working here. This is how the conversation played out briefly. And I was like, can you help me get a job here?
And as she hears more about Walmart, it seems like this perfect opportunity. It's everything she was looking for. It's a big company, and she thinks she can grow there. So she applies for the job, and she gets it. She gets the job.
That's when I started working at Walmart. I was happy. I was really happy because I was going to be getting paid more money than what I usually get paid. I was, you know, look, just the big picture. I just saw the big picture, the big picture.
So she starts this new job. She's working in the deli and the bakery at Walmart.
Don't forget the name John Crawford III. Don't forget Walmart.
And the bakery, you know, requires us to go in the freezer, take all the frozen bread, take the boxes out, lift the boxes, you know, move stuff around to get what bread we're looking for. And then on the deli side, you take out your rotisserie chickens, which they store them inside like a cooler, like, and they come inside this box. The box weighs between 35 to 50 pounds, so they're pretty heavy.
It's pretty hard work, but Otisha says she likes it and she finally feels like she's on the path to a stable career.
That's when I was able to move into my apartment, my first apartment by myself, just me and my children. So yes, I was happy.
But then one day, things started to change.
I was in the freezer taking out the bread to get ready to start my cycle over again to get them ready for the next day so that I can put them inside to get them proofed and ready for the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the sharp pain hit and I went to the bathroom and I seen that I was bleeding.
Hmm.
I had not said nothing. But when I went to the hospital, that's when they told me I was pregnant. And they wanted me to stop doing heavy lifting to avoid miscarriage. I believe it was like nothing that weighs more than 20 pounds.
And the doctor tells you that specifically. Don't lift boxes, because if you lift boxes, you might miscarry. You might lose the baby.
Yes.
Hmm.
I left the emergency room, went home, went to sleep, woke up, went to work, waited for the manager to come in to talk to her about what was going on. And explained to her about what the doctor said, showed her the paperwork. I told her the doctor told me no heavy lifting for over more than 20 pounds. But my job consisted me to do heavy lifting.
And what did she say?
Oh, my goodness. She said a lot of things. Oh.
Like what?
She told me Demi Moore did somersaults on the stage at 9 months pregnant.
Running, you know, you gotta take it easy. Yeah. I took up a little gymnastics.
No. Demi Moore, the actress.
Yes, the actress. I'm not Demi Moore.
Would you like to see some?
Yes, I would. Demi Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God, here we go. Jeez, what is...
So your manager said, Otisha, look, I'm sorry, your doctor said you can't lift boxes, but I once saw Demi Moore on television, very pregnant, doing acrobatics on a stage.
So therefore, you should be able... She didn't apologize about nothing. She just compared me to Demi Moore and told me that Demi Moore did that on the stage. And if Demi Moore could do it, there shouldn't be no problem with me working.
It's Demi Moore, kids. We'll be right back here.
Wow! Hey, yo, drama, hold up, sir. Hold on. Stop the motherfucking record.
All right.
I want you to Pondy replay, drama. Pondy replay.
Let's give him one more chance, man. Run that shit the fuck back.
Oh, my goodness. She said a lot of things. Oh.
Like what?
She told me Demi Moore did somersaults on the stage at 9 months pregnant.
Running, you know, you gotta take it easy. Yeah. I took up a little gymnastics.
No.
Demi Moore, the actress.
Yes, the actress. I'm not Demi Moore.
Would you like to see some?
Yes, I would. Demi Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God, here we go. Jeez, what is...
So your manager said, Otisha, look, I'm sorry, your doctor said you can't lift boxes, but I once saw Demi Moore on television, very pregnant, doing acrobatics on a stage.
So therefore, you should be able... She didn't apologize about nothing. She just compared me to Demi Moore and told me that Demi Moore did that on the stage. And if Demi Moore could do it, there shouldn't be no problem with me working.
It's Demi Moore, kids. We'll be right back here.
You also put it to me as, you know, if I can't do the job, then I can go out, walk out the doors. So I really didn't have a choice. So I'm looking at it like this. I have this place, I have my rent, I'm pregnant, I just have to be careful. I'm just going to go ahead on and keep the job and do what I'm supposed to do and just take it. So I just had no choice but to just weather the storm.
So she just kept going to work. She kept lifting those heavy boxes of bread and chicken. And things were fine for a little while.
I was picking up one of those heavy boxes of chicken, rotisserie chicken, let's be more specific. And when I lift, I had this sharp shooting pain on my back, on the left and the right side, and it shot down and it went from all the way up from my shoulder blade all the way down my leg to my foot. I almost dropped the whole box on my feet, but I caught myself. And I was hurting so bad. I was having muscle spasms, like a seizure in my body. I was taken to the emergency room. They gave me medication. They told me I needed to sit home for a while. They checked the baby. The doctor was like, you shouldn't be doing all this heavy lifting. And you know that from the first visit.
But Otisha kept showing up for work, and she's getting bigger and bigger and closer to her due date. And she's starting to wonder what she's going to do when this baby is born. So she goes to her manager.
I said, do you know any information far as, you know, leave of absence? She gave me a number to call, and I applied.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I got back to work the next day, they called me to the office.
Mm-hmm.
And they was like, well, I wanted to bring to your attention that we did receive your request. And they told me that I was a temporary associate and Walmart no longer need my services.
They basically let you go.
Yep. I was so devastated. I was just like thinking, what am I going to do? Because I was, you know, a single parent. I had three kids. I had this baby on the way. Why nobody going to hire a 7-month pregnant woman? Who was going to do that? I did everything that they ever asked me to do. And when they let me go, I was so sad and I was so hurt. I couldn't even talk when they told me that they no longer need my services. I was at that point thinking, what is the point of me being here?
What advice would you give as far as, like, rearing children based on, your practice? And, like, what guidance would you say, like, children need and that type of thing? That's my question.
Okay, let me just repeat it. You said, what guidance do children need?
Yes.
Is that the question, dear?
Yes.
Okay, I would say the most important thing that children need to receive from their parents is that they are of value second to none, and that they are loved and that they are respected. Because, see, children don't ask to be born. Children have nothing to do with the selection of parents. And so when a male and a female come together and they produce an offspring, that's like a gold engraved invitation to the child to come to the planet. And so very often, if people do not take the act of sexual intercourse seriously and it becomes a game and they're just playing, and so then the female finds out that she's pregnant, and then the male, if he's not ready to be a father, he'll say, well, it's not mine. Do you see what I'm saying? So that what is being taught to children, the most important thing, that they are of value, and this is why I give the advice, in the system of racism, white supremacy, black people should seriously consider not having children until they are 30, and men need to be 35, no more than 2, no closer together than 3 years apart. Now, why do I say that? Because children need mature parents. For a child to be born and have a parent, I don't want to take care of the baby. I want to go to the party. Do you see what I'm saying? All of this is injurious to the child's sense of self. And so it's not a matter of people blaming themselves or feeling bad. It's like, again, it's just like slavery was the beginning of racism, white supremacy. We could say that. And in slavery, black people were just supposed to be breeders. The woman was supposed to be a breeder. The man was supposed to be a stud. They didn't get married. They couldn't get married. And the slave master would ship the children away to another plantation, sell them to somebody. And that's no different than what we have going in foster care, where people are playing with sex, producing children they can't take care of. And the children are so deeply harmed. But again, I don't want anybody who is parented or child going to foster care. These are things that we have to start thinking about as black people. And this is why it's important to understand the system of racism. Racism, white supremacy, has no intention of maximally developing black children. The system is about their fear of their genetic annihilation and seeing that black people are the threat to their genetic survival. So they can't structure the maximal development of black children. But this is something that black people need to deeply think about as we revolutionize ourselves. So to go back to, you see, let's say if a person doesn't intend to get pregnant, doesn't intend to become a father, then they really are angry with the demands that a child makes. A child makes demands because a child is helpless. And so the child is crying or upset when their demands or their needs are not met. And then somebody's going to yell at the child or call the child out of their name, you little black so-and-so. All of that is the product of a sick system. But we have to begin to understand what the system is doing to us. And we have to challenge the system by transforming our behavior, transforming our understanding, and transforming our behavior. And I say that a child's sense of self is developed before the egg meets the sperm. The sperm meets the egg. And meaning, what are the parents thinking about? Do they think they're involved in some nasty game? What are they thinking about when they are engaging in the act of self-reproduction? So I don't know if that is helpful, but children have to be told they are of value, not yelling and screaming at them and calling them out of their names. You see, they have no control. Children need 3 years to be able to be a baby and grow through that stage. You see, and so if they're crowded, the child is crowded by having a sibling 1 year behind it, and so then there's two little children trying to get their needs met. And so under the best of circumstances, this can be problematic. Under the circumstances that we are forced to live under racism, white supremacy, this can be catastrophic to the child's development and can interfere with the next phase when they go to school and when they really start learning. So I hope that's helpful.
Context of white supremacy. The grandcestor, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Cameo appearance by Puff as well. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism, Thursday, June 28th, 2018. So I have been told. We are on topic, going to stay on topic, workplace racism. However, given what we heard in the audio segment, and in no way should this be processed or thought of as some sort of, dig, they call it, at Miss Otisha Woolbright. That's the victim that we heard in the piece, former employee at Walmart. in no way, you know, is this a critique of her. We are all victims. And, you know, I've said before, Gusty, I do not have children. It looks frightening in the context of white supremacy to attempt parenthood. That being said, I was reminded immediately of Dr. Welsing's many times on this broadcast and many other forums where she said, when you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. And not even to imply that Miss Woolbright was playing around with sex, because I don't know anything, any information about her other than what you all, we just heard in the report. However, we have talked many times about the whole process of having offspring. Black people having offspring as victims of white supremacy. Dr. Welsing talked about that and having extensive dialogue, because, man, black children pay a penalty, an enormous penalty in the system of racism, white supremacy, when things have not really been well thought out, well planned out. I mean, the system is set up for abusing all of us anyway, but when those children that really hasn't been considered, what's it going to be like, you know, attempting to parent a black child, male, little boy, little girl, in a system of white supremacy? What is that going to be like? Like, have we thought about, you know, planned out the first 10 years of our child's life? Like, when all of those types of things are not happening, man, whew, the joke is on the offspring. I feel like it's never incorrect to include the words, and particularly to give full context to what Dr. Welsing had to say. I could not find a segment of her saying, when you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring, although she said it lots and lots of times. But wow, that served just as well the grandsister, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And again, no, in no way a critique of Miss Woolbright, victim of white supremacy. That's it. This here broadcast, Workplace Racism. Dial in if you have commentary to share. You will have to get in line behind Gus. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you do not want to use your phone, if you want to drop an email, my email, untiljustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. You can drop an email and we can read your commentary on the air. If you have a situation that you want counter-racist feedback to get a perspective, or if you have commentary about something that has been shared on the broadcast, feel free, submit an email and we will read your comments on the air. Have a few emails to share already. They will have to get in line behind Gus T. A few things about the audio segment. Remember the name, John Crawford III. I do think, or I know, we've had confirmation, some of our guests, sometimes race soldiers, what they do is just have propaganda pieces. I think it's always great to, or I think for white supremacy, they always appreciate or find new ways of proclaiming one of the racist tropes of black people, non-white people reproducing and having all these children and deadbeat dads that just love reinforcing that notion without connecting it to that is what the system of white supremacy is designed, meticulously designed to produce. I definitely think it could have simply been a propaganda piece because they have white women who are victims of what they're calling discrimination against pregnant mothers. But they started off with this black female's dilemma. And of course, she's got all of these children and no dad. And, you know, it's two steps away from her being a crack mother type of scenario. Could be propaganda, in my opinion. Whites do that sort of thing on a regular basis. That said, I think a lot of folks can relate to that type of abuse in the workplace, perhaps not pregnancy, but certainly no regard for black mental health, even with a doctor's note and what have you. It's, you know, the boxes are 40 pounds and you got to get that chicken. If not, feel free to, you know, punch out and not return. I'm sure a lot of us are very familiar with those sort of slave type conditions in a job workplace. The children aspect of it, huge, always said what I had to say on that. And that segment was rather lengthy. I guess the last thing I would say really quick, that segment was lengthy. I didn't play at all. Something really bothered me about all of the white reporters referring to Miss Wolbright on a first name basis. Almost reminded me of the conversation we had about brother. Like, I just feel in a system of white terrorism, you know, this is a black mother being forced to work under crude conditions, slave conditions, right? Where she could have died. I thought that was what was going to happen in the story. Child was going to die. Thought this might be kind of racial pornography as well. Like, we're not really trying to solve these problems. We're not concerned about black maternal mortality rates. We're not concerned about any of that. This is just entertainment so we can hear how the Negros are suffering still at Walmart. John Crawford III. All of that being said, something really bothered me, just the familiarity in the piece, like Otisha, and then like they've known her for 5 years or what have you. We're not friends. Why are you calling me on a first name base? Like I said, it reminds me a lot of brother. There's just a lot of that, you know, real phony concern, as though there's some sort of fraternity here. And this is pregnant woman, get that rotisserie chicken out and get it here. This is Walmart, and we got rotisserie chick. That's what we got here, not fraternity. Just being truthful. Next, let's get to it. Gus T was excited, eagerly awaiting workplace racism to share about teacher training. This is workplace. I'm applying my workplace racism code. I have no idea how so many listeners on a regular basis, they work 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, who knows how many hours per week, and do not have commentary to share about workplace racism. I have had 1 week of teacher training, 4 classes, and lots of things to share, ways it came up, things it made me think about in terms of how we apply counter-racist code on the job. A few of the things that I was able to make notes that I could keep track of them. There were so many. First up, I said last week I was the only non-white person in the training, or I think there was one other person, but he is substituting from a different studio. So sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. So on a consistent basis, I was the only non-white person there until we got, or third class, the gorgeous black female from before reappears. And she says she's changed her mind. She's going to go ahead and do the teacher training. Elated. I did not want to be the only black person going through the teacher training with a bunch of race soldiers, although I knew it was, you know, likely that such a thing could happen. But this drastically increased my appreciation and enjoyment about going through the whole process. I did not even have any sort of extensive dialogue with her until a few days later. Outside of class, I just bumped into her and was just like, man, I am so thankful that you're here. I thought I was going to have to be with all these white people the whole time through, and you're here, and she has natural hair and everything. Like, woo, I am super, super happy. And she said the same thing. In fact, she said, when I was trying to make up my mind about whether or not to do this, you were part of the reason that I said I'm going to go ahead and do it now. It's like, what are the odds of being able to do training with a black male? I said, I'm going to go ahead and do it now. That's all of what she was telling me in her answer. So super excited. And you all have so consistently, or not all of you, not all of you, but a lot of Cal's listeners over the years have demonstrated really just exemplary levels of black self-respect on the job. Roz, Emmy, Thomas in New York, a number of you all, our caller down in Florida at the courthouse, a number of listeners, I'm sure even more of you all than that, have constantly called in and shared about Black people on your job where you tried to help them out as best you could, alerting them to constructive information, trying to help them solve problems, sometimes even talking directly about racism. Gus did not do the latter. No talking about racism. I don't do that. It takes a while for me to think, okay, this person might be receptive. You never know. Person might have a lot of white friends or anything. So I do not talk about racism, have not done so. But at least being constructive. This is, I'm bringing this up for workplace racism, not just, you know, as a cheap way to talk about yoga, but I mean, this is 200-hour certified teacher training. You do this to get a job teaching yoga. That's what a lot of people are doing, or most of the people, that's what they are doing this with, the intention of pursuing teaching as a profession. Work, and it's school. Even if it wasn't that, it's school. You have reading assignments and written lots of written assignments, you know, workplace racism. So we have reading assignments. They had a book that we were supposed to purchase. I didn't want to purchase the book because a white person wrote it, and I'm already immersed in racist culture, racist yoga culture, so I didn't want to support that. They have the book, and they actually have a copy that you can rent. There is a Seattle, I told you, to over 20 local library branches. You are always about a stone's throw from the library, and we are a stone's throw from the library at the yoga studio. So I take the book, scan it. I do not take all of the scanned sections and offer it to the entire class and say, oh, I scanned all of the sections. Everybody, if anybody didn't get the book or what, or if you just want scanned copies, if that might be easier to work with, bam, everybody can have it. I have the, we have an email list, so I could have easily done that. I specifically, exclusively shared the documents with her because she said she did not have the book. So I told her, no problem. I'm going to scan it for myself and I'll email it to you as well, modeling some of the same black self-respect that I've heard consistently from listeners. But again, I do not bring up racism, white supremacy at all with her. Incidentally, in class, we've been in class together now 3 out of 4 times. And every time I just go sit next to her. Yes, and make sure we get that on the record. In a class of all whites, Gus T, without hesitation, every time chose to sit next to the pretty black female. Now, yesterday we get to class, and I had taken the class, the actual yoga class, before our teacher training class, okay? I was there before anybody else, first person there because I was in the class before. So I went in, I set my stuff down, and then I went back out to get a snack or whatever, because you have to be in class for like hours, teacher training class for hours. So I come back, and they've kind of wedged in, and we've all been sitting basically in the same spots. We don't have assigned seats, but pretty much by third, fourth class, people are pretty much sitting where they sat the class before generally. So I come in to get my spot, and we have a new person. He's kind of scooted in and is sitting in my area. So I go, I get my spot, plus I've already set my stuff down. And they're like, oh, you can come and get this spot on the other side of the room. And at first I got up, and then I was like, you know, I do not want to be on the other side of the room sitting next to this white man. I am cool where I am. I have the black female with me. I would rather sit right here. No, thank you. I already have my stuff. I'm going to stay right here. And she's like, oh, all right, fine. And I stayed right there and I said, yep, I think that sort of thing, particularly when you're in a job situation where, or any sort of workplace situation where you are not as concerned about, oh, they could fire me or take some sort of punitive actions. Like, oh yeah, like you should look for as many opportunities as possible. Like, you know, this is not something that I feel required to do. I don't think I need to get up and move every 5 minutes. Take advantage. Next, I was thinking, I don't celebrate any holidays. I've talked about that before. Nothing. I don't even celebrate my own birthday. My quote unquote birthday is coming up during the training, on one of the training days, actually. And I said, oh, I should bring this up to see if I can leverage it so that we can go back on the rooftop. I have glowed about the rooftop view before, taking yoga up there. It is amazing to look out on the entirety of Seattle from the roof. I stopped from my euphoria about returning to the rooftop to say, are you out of your cotton picking mind? What are you talking about telling them your birthday or any sort of unnecessary personal information that they might, you know, can go and file? These are race soldiers. They can go and file a look, find whatever data or info possible. But you do not need to volunteer unnecessary information to whites for any reason in the workplace. And even beyond, for this specifically, you do not want to invite opportunities for race soldiers to mistreat you. Birthday is one. I've seen where people say, oh, it's your birthday, that means we get to hit you. Where, and I'm talking about like quote unquote adults are doing this, not, you know, middle schoolers. I've seen where this becomes, now we have license to engage in what they call practical jokes and pranks and such because it's your birthday, so we can play all kinds of tricks on you. Not to mention the food aspect. We've talked about that. This might mean, oh, I get to make a cake and bring it in and put God knows what in it. I mean, it's opening up a lot of unnecessary opportunities for tackiness and abuse. No need to share that at all. And the other big one, consistently worst combination in the known universe. Whites, alcohol. You do not want to bring up any sort of, oh, I got a birthday. Whoa, birthday. Why didn't you say so? We're going to do. And alcohol already came up. We've had, I say, we've had four classes. We had class on Sunday. We went on the roof. That was class three. Race soldier, white man, suspected race soldier at the class. He's doing his thing. He comes in after that class the next day and he says, you know, I'm feeling way more confident about, you know, my cadence and being able to go through and know the postures and have all the details memorized. We were at class the other day. Man, I was so hungover. It was Pride Fest, as they call it, last weekend here in Seattle. I talked about, so they had parades and rainbows, and it was anti-sexual behavior run amok all weekend long. So I guess he may have participated in some of that. At any rate, he spoke openly, unabashedly about being super hungover and how that impeded his performance in class. And I'm just thinking, like, wow. Like, could I, as a black person, any circumstances, imagine coming in and just being so frank about I was so intoxicated that it was impairing my ability to function in class, and think that, oh, that Gus is so funny. Woo, party animal. I cannot imagine that. Even in the context of yoga, I cannot imagine that at all. Like, whoa, we maybe need to have a conversation about your substance abuse, or are you a crackhead? I mean, anyway, alcohol and whites, bad combination. I am looking for the opportunity to get that in. I don't drink because I am sure it's summertime and there are a lot of bars and such in the vicinity where the yoga studio is. So, and we have classes late on Friday evenings. So I could easily see it being something where, hey, it's almost 11. We should go to such and such and get some shot. I don't drink. And I would emphasize making sure that people on your job, if you notice a tendency for going out late or going to bars and sort of things, make that known. I don't drink. Expectations that I'm going to be sober. Thank you. Last thing I will bring up. Oh, with the notes, as I said, I thought that would be an interesting counter-racist experiment. I said I scanned the pages that we're supposed to read for the book. I scanned those and shared exclusively with the black female. I said it'll be an interesting experiment to see, does she share with the other whites in the group and make it public? Like, oh, you know, Gus hooked me up with the lid. If anybody else needs the pages, feel free. Or if she just keeps it to herself, we shall see. I said this could be a test for white identification. That is something that has been a source of agitation for me. White identified individuals in the yoga context might be for other people in a workplace context, but that has been a source of agitation. So we shall see. This way I don't have to bring up racism. I can just see how the information flows. If there's a flow at all, then oh well. Anywho, I will stop there. We do have people who emailed commentary, so I will read what they had to share as we proceed. The number again is 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have figured out some codes that work well to minimize problems in the workplace, make sure that you're not being falsely accused. We certainly need to hear that. You should be one of the first people to dial in. You figured out how to get that raise every time. You figured out how to get that big office and no problems. Certainly, if you are having any sort of conflict issues that you would like counter-racist suggestions to help try to resolve, dial in, get a hand up, and we will try our best. We'll go to the folks who dialed in with a hand up from there. Let's see. First few folks, if you dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. Oh, I'm thinking something was wrong. The switchboard is not activating the lines. So give me 1 second and I'll reload it and try again. Let's see if it's working correctly now. Okay, looks like we got it working correctly now. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments you would like to share, proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, everyone. Just wanted to share just a couple of things. I thought it was very funny, the birthday story, guys, because a family member of mine had a birthday recently, and I think it was maybe a combination of racist and maybe victims. She didn't really elaborate on it, but when she went into her job or her plantation, they just, you know, kind of went overboard, got her so many different things, a bunch of different, you know, things that she shouldn't be eating, cakes and food, all types of stuff. And I thought the funniest thing was because I could see, like, she showed me pictures of what all they got her, and one of the things was a Starbucks gift card. And I was trying to think, I don't remember seeing her really going to Starbucks too much. I don't know if maybe, and like I said, I'm probably going to ask her, like, who actually gave that to her, because I think that would have been funny if it was a white person who gave her a Starbucks gift card after everything that just recently happened. But the one thing that I guess I wanted to talk about this week from my plantation was that I guess I would like some guidance on the victim that I have to sit by. I've spoken about the victim. Manager said that she sat her by me to kind of help her maybe do better with her work. And I noticed that, like, she seems like she's very white identified, and I think, and I'm definitely would not like share anything with her, even if it wasn't about racism. I might be being too short with her, because when she asks me questions, I really just, for the most part, just give her one word answers. But I overhear her, like, you know, saying things about her credit score, and like she talks about when she's, you know, consumed edibles and alcohol and just to these different suspected races. And I don't say anything, but it's like, sometimes I kind of feel like I wish there was a way for me to say something. But at this point, it's like, if she doesn't know by now with how old she is, then I guess maybe she feels comfortable with it. But there was one, I did see that at one point in time, she had left something out, which was like customers' private information. And I held back from saying anything to her, and I kind of feel like maybe that was not the right thing to do. but I don't know if maybe anyone else would have, you know, maybe done something different, because she, I don't know how much she's really catching on to the job, but I know for sure that was one thing that they let us know, like, you know, don't leave out like customers' personal information. So that was just the one thing. And I get, and again, this same, and again, this week, the manager keeps kind of comparing myself to her, like, you know, people like us, like, that's what she is saying to me. And I don't know if maybe she's just trying to condition me to get me to this point where, you know, I should open up to her, should trust her, which is kind of odd to me. But, the one good thing that I did do, she was discussing one of her fears, and I kind of shared like a similar fear, but all I said was, oh, well, you know, that's very, you know, it's very interesting. So I did think about, this is not someone who, you know, you should share anything, any extremely personal information like that with. So that's all I have to share for now, and I'll mute my line. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Appreciate that, Red in Nevada. I guess the question where you were soliciting feedback with this victim of racism who might be a bit white identified, you were saying that she kind of sits in your area and maybe is saying some things that are not workplace appropriate, and she left a customer's personal personal information visible on her desk area, and you didn't say anything, or sometimes I guess you give her shorter answers than maybe someone else. And I guess the question, should you change that? Should you try to be more courteous, more helpful to her? Like, you know, hey, Jackie, you left such and such information out, you know, try to be careful about that sort of thing. That's, you know, a big no-no. Should you try to be more helpful to her, or should you just continue with your code of trying to minimize contact? This is someone who's kind of frustrating for me, and I'm just going to minimize contact. Is that your question?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I didn't make that clear. I'm sorry. So basically my question is, I'm not going to really speak to her about anything that's non-work related, but if I were to see something like that happen again, because there's only been like maybe one other time to where it's like I heard her, you know, struggling with trying to get a task done. And so I just went ahead and gave her, you know, briefly and very shortly gave her the information. But I am struggling with, you know, really not wanting to say too much to this victim, because she's constantly, you know, talking, constantly gossiping. So just wondering if people would, even if it comes to even work related stuff, not even converse with the victim. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
That is interesting. I guess if it's something that you are thinking about, if it's bothering you in some way, it might be good to take some time to reflect. Maybe that's what this is now. I mean, I don't know how many other options there are other than trying to be more helpful and perhaps getting stuck in situations where you might have to listen to her gossip briefly, or whatever other frustrations come up in dealing with her if you try to help out, or just kind of continue with what you're doing and being very minimal in terms of the contact and verbal exchanges that you all have. And that's why I said at the beginning, some of our listeners, they are all about demonstrating, you know, as much Black self-respect as they can and helping out other Black people and talking to them on the job. Other folks, you know, they take a different approach. And I understand the logic of both. It's, you know, just one of those, you kind of have to figure out which one is bothering you more. If you try to help out more, is that going to cause you more problems, more frustration? Or if you try to minimize contact, still being helpful when you can. I think, like with the personal information thing, like that seems like one you might be able to, you know, give a quick bit of assistance and just letting her know and moving along. Like that doesn't, at least it seems like it shouldn't be one that requires a big, long, extensive chat or chance for gossip or what have you. But, it's kind of personal preference, kind of feeling, just making the best of a bad situation. If there were no white supremacy, she wouldn't be identified and she wouldn't be annoying you in that manner and a whole lot of things. But, you know, just trying to make the best. Any other folks have suggestions on, you know, whether you would try to be more helpful or just continue to try to minimize contact?
Greetings, can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
I would say continue to be courteous. I think that the observation of the other non-white person being gossipy should be at least recorded in one's memory to stay, you know, within a personal realm of just being courteous and doing your job, you know, as far as that concerned, because in that particular case, the other non-white person by being gossipy has already helped you regulate your contact with her, you know, by being a gossipy type of person. So, I mean, you can basically just rest your conscience, if that's any problem, to, you know, as far as how you are going to relate to that person. If they're a gossipy person, then you know, keep your distance. That's it.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Other folks, any thoughts on how you would deal with this person who might be a little bit white identified and also engages in some gossip and inappropriate work talk? Would you make an effort to try to be more courteous or more helpful, or would you kind of maintain your distance and keep it minimal? Any other suggestions, folks, that we have? I'm sorry, did I hear someone? Thought I heard a call. Any of the other folks that had a hand up? Yes, your line was breaking up a little bit. You want to give us another sentence?
Yeah, I want to. I'm sorry, Gus. I'm going to put my earpiece in and see if that helps. It usually does.
Okay, you're clearer now, Ivy. We can hear you.
Okay. Okay, hello?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Okay, let me turn up my volume a little bit. So, excuse me. Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers online. Man, I think what you, Gus, as well as what the firefighter said, are both great, even though they contrast. I understand, you know, where Red is coming from, because, you know, you don't want to see another black person lose their job, and she's doing things where she could, you know, lose her job. So I understand how she could kind of have an unrest about not helping her out, because the stakes are so high and the consequences are so large. I guess I would try in a very discreet way to help her, and, you know, even keep that minimal, as you said, Gus. And I would also even try, if I could, to advise her about the gossip in a discreet and friendly and humble way, and just try to, you know, help her out, because that also can lead to her termination. And so that was all I had, and I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
That's important too, especially I would say in this era. Like, you do not want to get caught up in a lot of gossiping. I think it was a white man at Netflix this week who got, I think they said he got fired, but, you know, white people don't get fired. Never mind. But I think they said he got terminated because he said nigger in some sort of conversation, maybe gossiping and practicing racism, but they let him go. I would be real cautious. I think we talked about that with Thomas in New York as well. And some other listeners have even talked about it in this exact context where it was a black person and they had another black coworker who was doing a lot of, you know, talking and inappropriate loud conversation and that sort of thing. Really be mindful about that. And if you can, you know, just kind of let the person know that, hey, you know, folks listen around here and you really want to be careful with what you're saying. We are under surveillance. Talk about that all the time and just kind of letting them know, really be careful. You can't just be talking like, you know, we're at home here in the office. People are listening and you never know. People might even be recording what you're saying to really remind folks of that. I know many Cows listeners kind of forget or minimize that very important point on a regular basis. Other folks have suggestions or I guess feedback for Red in Nevada situation with unfortunate victim might be white identified.
Can I be heard?
Mr. Steele?
Yes, this is Ken Steele and I'm calling from Los Angeles. Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles at the moment. And I totally advise against giving any sort of unsolicited advice to any victims on the job that are exhibiting confused behavior. Confusion is deadly, and it has a tendency to harm people that aren't confused. One person's confusion can go ahead and cause a lot of harm unto oneself. If I were you, I would totally minimize my presence to this other victim, and just try to not associate with this victim if they are engaging in such behavior, because if they are loud talking and carrying on in a way that suggests that they might be white identified, then it's likely that any suggestion that you would give to them would put you on their radar as someone that they can get some sort of a brownie point for harming, which I just see as a consistent pattern in workplace environments. So I would advise against it. The last time I got unsolicited advice from a fellow victim on the job, I found it not to be constructive. In fact, I found that, or I suspected that it was the case that they were working on behalf of the white supremacist, and honestly, all I did was interpret that as the white supremacist speaking through that victim. So, even if that wasn't the case, that's how I interpreted it. So, I just I would advise against any sort of unsolicited advice being dispensed on the job to fellow victims, even if you think in your mind you're helping out, because oftentimes that may not be the case.
Logically sound. As I said, not all of the Cows listeners are advocates of the helping out other victims on the job, and most of them, if not all of them, have had very logical points as to why they take that stance. I see very valid the folks who've taken that position. And I think we have had the horror stories of some people attempting to assist other victims on the job and it not working out correctly or not working out in their favor. So I understand. Other folks, we have any other suggestions or feedback for Red in Nevada, her situation? Do you help or do you minimize contact with a confused victim workplace setting? I will say, before we get the other caller, Mr. Fuller, I have heard him, both he and Mr. Edward Williams, counter-racism.com. I have heard both of them say, specifically with that word help, have advised, even when using the word help, that if we're talking about someone who is a quote unquote adult, put that in quotes, they can ask for help, that, you know, they should be old enough to be able to say, I'm confused about this, or I'm maybe not the leaving the personal information out. Maybe that's something that they didn't know they needed some help on. But for most situations, people can request help. And I've heard both Mr. Williams and Mr. Fuller talk about sometimes that's how conflict can start, when we attempt to help someone who has not asked for or sought out our assistance. So I would keep that in mind sometimes as well. Is that Mr. Reed, founder, Black Talk Radio Network?
Yes, it is, Gus. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm going to offer another suggestion, because I was listening to the intro and you was like, and I never really heard the intro where you was like, if you've had successes on the job, you know, putting success in quotations, of course, but able to navigate that world. But I do have a couple of questions. What is white identified? Because coincidentally, when I worked in that type of environment, we're talking about an office environment. I'm sure people heard the term office politics, and, you know, just the management. So I worked in management in quite maybe about two or three different corporate different companies. And so there's office politics always at play there. And unfortunately, there weren't a whole lot of other victims in my environment, but there may have been one or two. But on the white identity question is, when you live in that, or should I say, work in that world, you wear that uniform. So my girlfriend, who I later had a child with, lived in the, in quotations, ghetto in Charlotte. And her sisters and you know, other family members and people in that neighborhood looked at me as being white identified because I'm wearing my work uniform, which is khaki. We know what the office place, you know, decorum is, or the code was appropriate and whatnot. So I was simply being identified because I wasn't using as much slang, and I'm not the greatest speaker of English, but, you know, just trying, because you're in that environment. And there are certain ways that you're going to advance and succeed in, and you're going to have to put on a mask when you go on that job. Now, in terms of helping another victim, that depends on how empathetic you are towards that other victim. I would look at if she's leaving personal information out that shouldn't be left out, that somebody can, you know, do identity theft on. I would not try to call out this person, so to speak. I might whisper in their ear, you know, you should put that up. Because you're not really, if you're there in that company, I'm speaking as a company person, now I'm doing my job. That customer's information she's leaving out is your customer. That's a customer of that company. So you're really not helping her out, but you're protecting that customer information by giving a suggestion to this person in a codified manner that, hey, you know, we've had issues and I hate for something to come back to you. So you might, you know, I noticed you leaving this out. You might want to put it up. So you are actually doing your job in protecting, you know, the customer's data, which I think will be every employee's job. Now, in terms of gossiping, I'm not the type of person that like to listen to a whole lot of gossip either, especially off the job. I'm not trying to hear all of that people's business. But on the job, strategically, some of them gossipers, you can get some valuable information on office politics from, because they just run it, they, you know, because they are into that type of stuff. So there's, again, in advancing in that environment, it's like, you know, you got to use every advantage you can. But again, that's a personal decision on if you want to, quote unquote, help out, you know, another victim. And it's how empathetic are you towards that victim? And do you think, you know, building a relationship over time in terms of sharing my personal information? I would, you know, again, are we talking about on a lunch break? Is this person coming up to my desk when we should both be working and telling me personal stories? That's incorrect. And I would, you know, but if it's during a break or lunch and they're confiding in me, I'm just going to put on a mask. You know, I may genuinely be interested in what they had to say, and I'm going to use nonverbal gestures to confirm them that, you know, I'm empathetic, but I ain't got to share no other story. They ask me some questions. I'll be like, no, nothing like that ever happened, and then ask them a question. But it could be that person, that white identified person, is under a lot of stress and from living in that world. You know what I'm saying? So it's just hard. That's a personal judgment call because I'm not there with you every day, you know, to make my own observations. But generally, that's how I deal with it. But thank you for allowing me to share. I've been in that environment, so it's a lot of things to consider. Thank you, guys, for the program.
Much obliged, Mr. Reed. To make sure we get your question, I think I used the term white identified when I was talking about my yoga work training, teacher training, and then I think Red in Nevada might have used it after I did. So I think, if my memory is not failing, I used the term first, the general counter-racist procedure. Whoever used the term first, they should define it. So unless I'm wrong, I used white identified. When I say white identified, I mean an individual classified as non-white who does not understand, think of, interact with whites as though they are racist, an enemy. They value having relationships with whites, quote unquote, friendships with white. They seek validation from whites. That's what I mean when I say white identified. They have the perspective of racist man, racist woman. These are the folks that they want to relate to, not non-white people. They tend to also have a lot of very anti-black attitudes. That's what I mean. So someone, what they call speaking proper English or how, whatever kind of clothes that they wear, in my view, that has nothing to do with being white identified. It has to do with, do you understand what it means to be white, really, at the core? Do you understand what it means to be classified as white? That's what I mean when I say white identified. If Red has a different definition, I think she might have used the term she wants to share. Feel free. Let's see. Did we have any other, I guess, thoughts for Red? We heard another personal choice. That's kind of when I said United Independent. That's when sometimes you just kind of have to decide what you're willing to risk, what you're willing to tolerate. You know, what you think is going to be best for not producing more problems. I can say I am a little bit on the curmudgeon side, so I am not always the most willing to open up and reach out and initiate dialogue and contact with others. That's my curmudgeonly ways, but other folks are much more extroverted, so they're much more willing and have an easier time opening up and willing to talk and help out. Hey, you left that over there, you know, get that done. Or maybe you want to watch what you're saying. Much willing to do that sort of thing. And to get out quickly if they see this is headed to some gossip. And did you hear about the pot? Oh, gotta go. Got that report to turn in. Just make sure you're watching that. I'll talk to you later. And get out quickly so that you don't get pulled into to the gossip. Do we have any other suggestions for Red? Folks satisfied? Grant, you can share as we go. I feel like I should try and pull in some of these emails as we go just to make sure that I don't get stacked up at the end of the program. So letter number one, person who wrote in, black male. He last week on the broadcast, folks recall, we had a black female. She was telling us about how the whites on her, and it wasn't just the white person on the job, it was like a really powerful white person on the job, like executive level. White person called her at her residence on her day off to say, you know, oh, you messed up this and you messed up that. And, you know, we need you to come in right now, you know, in the next 5 minutes to fix this. And it turns out it was something really, you know, minor, like she had knocked an eraser off the table or something. I mean, just really, really petty from the way that he dramatized it over the phone. So this happened. We talked about this last week on workplace racism. So the person is writing in talking about that specifically. He writes, I sympathized and identified with the lady who received the call from her manager while off duty. I am retired now, but when she described how that call made her feel, it brought me back vivid memories of racist practices on the job. I know exactly how she felt when she got that call. This was a harassment call calculated to cause her to suffer undue stress over time. Black people need constructive networks where we can get positive feedback and have a place to vent. Keeping the Proper composure on the job is important, but suppressing stress is deadly. Keeping it inside will kill you. Devils know this. No name calling. I'm not even reading anything like that. If you're going to write in, no name calling, even of whites. I had such a network to contact immediately in such case. Keeping it inside will kill you. I had such a network to contact immediately in such cases. This enabled me to keep my composure in the face of racist terrorism by keeping things in their proper perspective, with all the laws, penalties, and government agencies supposedly dedicated to racial justice. You would think racism in the workplace would be curbed. Nothing of the sort has happened. Suspected racists will risk their jobs and heavy sanctions against their companies to practice racism. They exude a racist aura, suggest being around them on a daily basis as detrimental to black people's health. There's research to support that is true. Dr. Darren Smith referenced it on this broadcast, 2012. How else do you explain that the babies of black immigrants have the same birth weight as white children, while babies born to black women native to this country do not? This was a story you covered in the compensatory call-in. We as black people must take steps on our own to protect ourselves from being killed by these jobs. Developing positive and constructive feedback networks are one remedy. The Otisha Woolbright, that was the black female, worked at Walmart, did not sound like she had a network. And that was not the full segment. They did about a 40-minute report. I posted the news article about it. You can follow the links and all that if you want to hear the whole thing. But the end of that segment, when she was talking about, you know, why am I even here? That sounds suicidal. We've had all these reports talking about black maternal mortality rates, medical apartheid, very serious. But absolutely, I think exactly what the listener wrote in, very logical, great sense, and hopefully the neutralizing workplace racism segment, hopefully that is some sort of network for some form of resource for people to be able to engage in exactly what he was talking about in his letter. Much obliged for writing in. Other folks that are on the line, if we've not heard from you, if you have your own situation that you want to discuss, if you have, I try to say it regularly, if you have figured out some codes that work, we certainly need to hear that. You should be, you know, immediate in pressing *61 so we can get you on the line. If you have commentary or need feedback suggestions, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Mr. Steele.
Yeah, so I'm very fortunate in that I have a job currently that does not require me to report to an office. And because of this, I have to give regular reports and CC a few different people on most of my messages. Now, I'm very strategic about what messages I CC people on, and you know what email strings people are included on, and this is kind of just to protect myself and some of my methods and practices on the job. And I have a colleague who was actually responsible for hiring me, was responsible for bringing me on. And he is, I have this sneaking suspicion that I was hired to be, you know, his black best friend or whatever. And, he's frequently inviting me out to, go to dinners and stuff like that, which is fine. Okay, cool. We don't see each other all the time. And, I got to keep up some level of, just social grace and everything like that. Okay, cool. But recently we were just getting a dinner, and he asked me, he just kept on asking me questions about, where am I getting my leads from, and, you know, how am I, you know, how am I maintaining such a high volume, and, you know, just that really specific questions. And I my technique has just been to kind of stumble and fumble through the answer and not really answer it. And I don't know, it just doesn't feel that smooth for me to evade the questions like that. And then recently I signed a company on board to my organization to help out with some sourcing of candidates and candidate sourcing. So he wanted to know what company I signed on. And I'm just thinking, you know, it took me so long to find the connections that got me, you know, the knowledge of this company and, you know, the knowledge, the contact and everything. And I just didn't want to give it up. And, you know, I just don't want this guy, you know, thinking that he could do my job. And, you know, it's just all very, very suspicious question asking. And I, you know, he wouldn't need to, you know, I don't need to, you know, give him the answers to any of these questions. So when he texted me this question, hey, what company did you use to get all these candidates? I just basically went on to the next point. I didn't even answer it. I didn't even acknowledge that the question was asked. I just kept it going. And I think that might be the smoothest response. And instead of trying to talk around whatever it is that, you know, that they're looking for, from now on, I'm just not going to answer it. I'm just going to talk right through it. And that's what I'm going with. Does anybody have any other suggestions on how not to share all of your methods and practices? Yeah. Oh, and another technique I would do is I would deflect the conversation to something that, you know, that felt neutral. So I would, you know, just talk about, I would just talk about something that I know we had a mutual interest in, cars or something. I would just deflect the conversation into cars. But does anybody else have any, like, I guess, deflection techniques that are smooth enough not to cause a scene or to make somebody feel as though their question has been evaded?
Do you think he's aware of your suspicion?
You know what? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think that now I did have a conversation with him one time because he did, on a CC conversation, attempt to diminish my work by using the word haphazard to describe one of my strategies, and I quickly you know, had to nip that in the bud, and I called him, you know, I asked him, you know, haphazard, can you please explain what you mean when you're using that word? I sent that in an email, and then I also followed that up with a phone call, and I just asked him directly, you know, is there an issue with, you know, some of the things that we're doing and everything. And it became apparent to me that he's a little, you know, that he wants to know everything that I'm doing so that he is still, I think he feels like his role is being diminished or he's being muscled out or something like that, because I essentially hired a team that kind of does his work for pennies on a dollar. So, you know, I think that's what his main concern is. But yeah, I don't know. I suspect that he's suspicious that I'm suspicious, because I don't think he's an idiot.
Yeah, I'm just taking all this in. Meaning, I'm just listening, and I'm comparing it to my experiences being around white people. They of course are very knowledgeable and cunning. They don't have any reason that I can think of being around a non-white person or helping, assisting a non-white person, unless they have an agenda. In turn, and I think I think you said something about that he had a part into getting you in that position or hiring or something like that. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, he divulged to me that the only reason why I was hired was because my LinkedIn was, quote, so tough. And I'm like, yeah, I have a professionally taken photo on there, but I think it was the pros that really specifically got to him, because I specifically kind of have a professional LinkedIn, but kind of threw some flavor in there. Some, I guess, you know, hip-hopified, you know, slang. And I did this because I know that the hiring managers are largely people my age, and anytime you can show a little bit of flavor, you can be receptive to that.
Mr. Steele, your line is breaking up. Your line is breaking up quite a bit. Your line is still breaking up. Your line is still breaking up. I don't know if you are on a cell phone, if you got like bad connection or what have you, but it's still breaking up quite a bit.
Oh, sorry about that. I guess I'm going through a mountain. Is it still breaking up or?
A little bit.
It's not a little bit better.
Right.
Okay. So basically, the only reason, and so he divulged on me, he only hired me based on LinkedIn searches and what was written in my LinkedIn profile. That was what, you know, kind of prompted him to give me a call in the first place. Now, it turns out that I know exactly what they needed to do, and I know the people who they need to know to get to where they're going, but I don't know if he knew all that, you know, because I didn't know exactly everything that I knew that, and I didn't even know exactly everything that they wanted me to do. So I don't know. I don't think that he anticipated that I would hire an entire team of people that, you know, could easily replace him and, you know, some of the other people that were paying a little bit too much money for.
I would say this is that as a white person, and white people are not ignorant to the system of racist white supremacy, and when they know that based on their input towards a non-white person, that they can get that non-white person hired. Their input. I would guess that he understands that. That he understands that, and from that understanding, anything else would severely be suspicious on his behavior, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But I said all that to say this, to try to make some kind of suggestion that hopefully may help you, that be prepared. I'm not saying to do it, but be prepared to be able to just tell him straightforward that if it becomes something that is challenging you in a negative way, be prepared to tell him that, you know, I understand and I appreciate the idea that you assisted me into getting hired, but I'm not going to allow you to use that to be able to, you know, and just, you know, fill in the blank or whatever that applies to with your issues with him, his issues with you on the job, because I'm pretty sure that happens a lot with white people in the workplace, you know, as far as either hiring or a situation to where them helping a non-white person get promoted, get a raise, you know, that sort of thing. They end up coming around again to basically get their penance, you know, from that non-white person.
And, I feel like he feels like I owe him.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You may be, you probably would have to be prepared to just let that person know that, you know, you're not going to, because once if they start in on it and you keep giving way to it, I would figure it would never stop. I would figure it would never stop until you know, something really bad happens to you. You know, where you no longer have any use, that person never no longer has any use from you. To get any use
right.
from you that would benefit them. You know, that sort of thing. You know,
yeah, and I just feel like he's trying to figure out everything. And then they're going to say, well, I'm the man now. I'm going to, you know, head up all these contracts. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, make all these agreements, and we're going to cut you out. And, you know, I don't know. That's just a feeling that I get. That's, you know, I just feel like he's asking too many questions, and I'm just constantly being made to feel like I have to answer them. And they're real interrogative, too, the way he kind of, it starts out friendly, and then it gets to being really interrogative. It's just very strange. And
but that's my contribution.
I would just say I'm sure it is strange and awkward to have some suspected race soldier in this context asking you these type of questions about how you are performing and what you did and that sort of thing. Absolutely. But that is strange. Just in the context, we shouldn't be too surprised. I think our codified software developer in Wisconsin was talking about she had suspicions recent, like within the last couple of weeks or days, suspicions that one of her coworkers might have had some sort of elaborate scheme to pretend like she had a job offer, and then, you know, to get her all geeked and commenting, and just to try to get more information, you know, just telling folks, hey, this is what it means to be classified as white. I think retired firefighter, I think the word that he used was cunning. Absolutely. For all of us to just kind of be very, very mindful of that on the job, especially when they're going to ask. I think, Mr. Steele, when you kind of were opening with your original commentary, and you were saying the statement of or the idea of when they go to ask these questions and are trying to get more information out of you, the technique of not answering their question, you do the same thing that they do. You give them the buckets of words, boom, 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 and then you move the conversation, compensatory conversation control, either by asking a question or you pivot it someplace else to where you can maybe talk for 2-3 minutes, be a little vague. You don't have to give them specifics, exact details, and then we just shift to wherever else we're going in the conversation. I'm a big advocate of that one. I think you were trying to ask if folks had other suggestions for when they come in and are firing all these questions on you and kind of giving you the interrogation technique as though you are some sort of terrorist. If folks have any other suggestions for how to control compensatory conversation control, do we have other listeners who have any thoughts on redirecting when you're coming in and they're trying to beat you for every piece of information about your job?
Have you heard? I'll be really quick. Thank you, Ivy. I know that I definitely like everyone's suggestions, and then also I noticed that with white people, they like to use the term industry standard or industry, typical of the industry, and that might be maybe something that you've been working to your repertoire to add to that buckets of words, because I feel like that's kind of like the answer that I've gotten. Like, if you want some specifics, they'll kind of give you that general, this is basically what everyone is doing. And I hope that helps. I'm in my line. Thank you.
That's in the code book.
I like that industry. Yeah, that's just industry standard. Just industry standard practices. Made a few calls. Cool.
Ivy, did you have commentary as well?
Yeah, I mean, what Red just said is, you know, awesome. I mean, everything that everyone said is great too. The thing that came to my mind is top secret. You could just say, you know, it's top secret, and if you see this person in person, you know, you can smile, or you could, you know, make sure that the expression on your face is one that is not mean or angry or anything like that, or maybe playful, or, you know, however you can work that, but you can say that, just, you know, top secret, and then you can...
Here's why you can't say top secret in this context, because they will, and a lot of corporate environments, they'll say, you're not a team player. Hey, this is a team. In fact, in these conversations, he likes to, you know, I'll say, well, my objective here is to do X, Y, and Z. I'll say that explicitly. And then he'll counter with, well, we are an our objective. And then I realize, oh, man, I'm sounding very selfish, and I'm sounding like I'm not a part of this team. So if I go and say, well, this is a secret, you know, then it's like, oh, so we're keeping secrets from each other. We're not a team anymore. What's going on here? And then I'm going to get, you know, the headquarters in Spain or wherever it is going to call my guy, my handler, and then my handler is going to go ahead and call me and say, well, again, you're not a team player. And the team is, you know, and I don't need, you know, any sort of insurrection type stuff. So that's why I haven't said, well, this is a secret and, you know, they're not privileged to know. I wish I could just pull an executive privilege on this situation, but I can't.
What were you going to say, Ivy?
I was just going to say, at that point, I would have started asking questions, because there was someone in the past who was accused of not being a team player, and they just simply asked, you know, what do you mean by that? Like, what is being a part of the team? Like, is it required that I share all of the ways that, you know, I am, you know, getting success or doing the things that I'm doing? Is that a requirement for being a part of the team? Because you would think being a part of the team is that you would do your job, that you would be an asset to the company, that you would make the company money or whatever, what have you. But, you know, to tell everything about and to pretty much train someone else, really, is what it sounds like they're asking you to do, to accuse you of not being a team player, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem just, and it doesn't seem correct. So I think in that point, I would start asking a bunch of questions. However, you do know your job, and you know what you're dealing with. And another thing you could also is, I don't think that people should disclose these, you know, types of things. You could say that as well. But again, you know your situation. I wish you all the best, and I'll meet my line.
Do we have any other suggestions for Mr. Steele's situation? Okay. Well, listen, as we proceed, we have other folks who dialed in. Either if you have your own situation that you wanted to discuss, or any of the comments that have been shared thus far, if you want to touch on any of those scenarios, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, hello, Gus, and to the fellow callers. This is Helen from New York, otherwise known as the Rotten Apple. Yes, one of my codes at the job is I assist other non-white people, but I always do it in a way that I'm very discreet in when helping other non-white people. If I see that they're, you know, making a mistake or in any way possible, but I never let them know. As far as when it comes to gossipers, I find that they attract drama, so I tend to stay away from them. Let's see. A situation. A fellow worker, well, an ex-fellow worker of mine's co-worker. She was working for a marketing company and very loyal to the company. So one of her jobs was taking money from the petty cash and going to get breakfast. For the boss. So also while getting breakfast for her boss, she would also, you know, pick up maybe coffee for herself, buy herself a coffee or a donut, something small, nothing extravagant or anything like that, nothing expensive. She did this for years, no problem. One day, the boss goes over the receipt and says, what is this? So she says, oh, I bought myself a donut. Oh, you're not supposed to do that, this, that, and the other. So the boss reprimands her for that. She agrees to pay the money back. It was under $5. She said, okay, pay it back or whatever, you know, apologize. But it became an issue. So it was still an issue even after she paid. So they eventually let her go, said that her performance wasn't up to par, this, that, and the other. When they let her go, they didn't change the passwords on any of the their computers. So she was able to hack in because she was like, she couldn't understand why she was let go because she was so loyal to the company. She, from home, she hacked into the computers. Of course, it's wrong, yes. And to find out what was going on, and she sees emails of her boss, you know, emailing other people or whatever, talking about that the receptionist area is too brown. We need to change things up. Yes. So then that's when it clicked to her, like, oh, that's why. Now, mind you, the young lady that I'm speaking about is non-white, but she speaks, she's Puerto Rican. So she doesn't look African-American. There were six young ladies that worked in the receptionist area. Only two of them were about the shade of Tyra Banks. Everybody else was non-white, but they could pass as white. So my ex-coworker, she alerted one other young lady that, look, they get ready to fire y'all. I just saw an email or whatever. I can't, you know, tell authorities. I can't, you know, because it was illegal what she did. But she did let one young lady know that, look, you know, get ready to put your resume out there. And soon after that, it was correct. A next young lady, brown skin young lady, was fired. So, yes, that's the only thing I want to share. Thank you for letting me share my story. Well, somebody else's story.
Context of white supremacy. If you have commentary you would like to share, number to dial 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Try to share constructive info if, for the people who, you know, think that that's something that they can apply on their job, try to share, help out victims when you can. We've had a lot of folks who've modeled that behavior down through the years. And just that, I think we've also had a lot of folks, when you begin to understand racism, white supremacy, and you pick up on those types of codes in the workplace, when they're talking about niggers, we don't want too many dark people here. Just paying attention and having an understanding that, yes, white supremacy, racism is here. This is what it means to be white. You can pick up on a lot of cues of things that are being said, things that are happening around you where you understand and grasp, oh, this is exactly what's happening right now. We have other folks who dialed in with a hand up that we missed totally. Any folks who dialed in that we have not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Jasmine. I just had a suggestion for Red. A lot of what I've been hearing is what I totally agree with as far as dealing with gossipers on the job that are non-white. I see that a lot where I work in a call center. There's a lot of non-white black people that work here, and they tend to engage with you know, the white people there. They gossip a lot with the white people. So I'm very leery about dealing with individuals that do a lot of gossiping. I definitely try to keep my distance from them. But as far as when, if I was to see that individual, a non-white person that could possibly lose their job, I may, in the job context, just let them know that, you know, you might want to, like, just do that off your computer, make sure the computer is not using that information about why you walk away from your desk. But as far as, like, basically kind of limit my conversation on any other thing with them, because what it's just like what Mrs. Still said, what I found is that sometimes when you're trying to help non-white people that are white-identified, they will kind of, they can take information that you're trying to share with them that you might find constructive, and they can turn it around on you, and it can end up backfiring on you. So just kind of keep that kind of limited. And my workplace situation today, my white boss, birthday it's Friday, I think it is. And my supervisor, which is also another, which is over her, she's not white, and she texted me and asked me if I would like a chicken for a birthday gift for her. Now, I was the third shift. It's only usually it's just me and the other non-white person that works here, which is my supervisor over me. Except on Wednesday nights. On Wednesdays, we usually have four of us. So it's two non-white supervisors. And then there's me. And then there's the application lady that was there. So when she asked me, being that it's so small, there's not a whole lot of people dealing with this birthday type of stuff or what have you. She asked me if I wanted a chip, and I told her, well, I can, you know, donate a small amount. So when I came in last night, I gave them like $3 for a gift card. When it's usually like a big market setting, I don't engage in any gifts. You know, I try not to get involved in that type of bringing food in and things like that. And because of my eating habits, I'm a vegan. I told most of the time when they bring food in, I can't eat half of the stuff that they bring in anyway. But I did kick in the $3 for the gift card for a non-white person. And I don't know, like I said, I'm not really sure. Like I know that a lot of people say that they don't get involved with the whole office politics as far as that's concerned, but being that it's such a scarce pool, I didn't really mind. And that'll be my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Traptomania. Someone, when I was I wrote on, I didn't give all the detail that I gave at the beginning of the program, but when I was writing on my Facebook page about some of the incidents that happened in yoga teacher training, one of the folks wrote in, they were like, man, do not eat anything if they bring any food. And I might be out of my cotton picket mind, but I am not that loony yet. And same thing, vegan. Proudly bring my own food for class. They had talked about going, trying to schedule some sort of going out or coordinating or whatever it is. Nip that in the bud. Vegan. I'm real. I even make up and add to it. I'm peanut. Have peanut allergies. Gluten free. And you know, I just stack on. Oh yeah, I can't eat that. Next to a peanut, I'll be in hives and allergic and whatever the case. And yeah, can't eat any of that. That should be like ironclad part of everybody's workplace code of conduct, regardless of what it is that you are doing. Other folks dialed in, if you have I am going to try to slip in another email, see if I can get all of these done before we get to the end of the program. Blackmail wrote in. He said, I recently met my non-white black. I recently met my non-white black neighbor after a good chat. He shared a workplace racism terrorist attack he encountered on the job, installing cable internet for a major service provider. While on the job in a customer's home, he said a white supremacist male, mid-40s, says, I bet if I put a gun to your head, you'd get the job done. He mentioned that he deals with racism on the job all the time. Put that in, the person put all in boldface print, all capital letters, in red type. I immediately suggested he tune into and participate in the Cal's broadcast. I even forwarded a show link to his email. Hopefully he's taken up my suggestions and is at least listening. We hope so too. Just had to share, for any suggestions and recommendations. Right on. Happening on a regular basis. That's a great one for a recorder. If I was working for someone and they made a comment like that, particularly with all of the shootings that they have had every hour, that might be one I would at minimum report. And I think in this day and age, you might even be able to say, hey, I did not feel comfortable with him making a comment like that. And just all of the different gun incidents and shootings and everything, the greater sensitivity that folks have, that whites have about firearms at this point. I would for sure make note of that and ask if a customer makes a comment like that and we don't feel safe. Is that a right that we have to say, hey, I'm going to excuse myself from, I mean, you're in this person's residence. What if he's a gun owner? He might have a gun right there. That's one I would definitely, I would, in fact, that might even be one that I might have to go check and make a call immediately. I've said before, we should always err on the side of personal safety. You're in somebody's residence. That is a very different thing than us. Not that that's funny. I don't take that as a joke at all. That's just white terrorism masked as a joke. We talked about that the only time they're truthful. That's one I think I would have to go and report immediately. I'm gonna pause, go get on the phone, call the folks at headquarters, report what was said. And see what the protocol is. What do folks think about that? If you're working in a white person's residence and they make a comment like this, the quote again, I bet if I put a gun to your head, you'd get the job done. Any thoughts? You're in a white man's residence. He makes a comment like that while you're on your job, you're installing, you know, whatever. In his residence, do you leave immediately? Do you write that one down? Do you keep working? Give a giggle. What do folks think?
First thought coming to my mind is asking questions. I would be looking for an exit, though.
What? Where's the door? That's question one. Do you have a specific question in mind that you would ask?
No, I haven't gotten that far yet. Other than it'd be something along the lines of questioning the statement he made, you know, to get a more thorough understanding of what that meant.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I know that what I would do, I don't know if I'm assuming with jobs where you have to enter someone's residence, I'm assuming there's some type of code of conduct or some type of policy. Hopefully he is familiar with the policy, and hopefully in that policy, maybe it will allow him to excuse himself from an uncomfortable situation. And so if that is the case, I would take these white people with these guns seriously. And so if that is the case, I would keep my eye on that person. And then when he said that, okay, well, sir, just give me a moment. Maybe he can make up an excuse why he needs to go back out to the truck and make sure he keeps his eye on anyone who would say anything like that, make his way to the exit, call his boss or whomever, and then just not go back in. But that's exactly what I would do. Even if it's not in the policy, I don't think any job is worth someone's life, especially with how volatile some people can be with firearms. I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Red in Nevada. That sounds logical and full of black self-respect to me. Any other thoughts? You're in a white person's residence, not on a job or not in an office situation, in their residence, and they make a statement like this. I bet if I put a gun to your head, you'd get the job done. Any other folks with a thought on what you think is a good code to follow? You're in a white person's residence under those circumstances.
Gus, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
The person that reported this, they Is he employed to a company?
The person that went through this works for a major service provider.
Oh, okay. I would immediately leave. I didn't know that I was assuming that this person was kind of like a private
no.
entrepreneur. No, I would immediately leave. Immediately leave and report it to the company, and you know, go from there, and go from there as far as that concerned. You know, yeah, immediately. that's a direct threat.
That's the way I interpreted that one myself. Direct threat of violence. I would not be comfortable staying in the house. That's one I think you should be immediately. Boom. Got to roll. Take that serious. Anytime a white person is talking in any way, shape, form about violence, that I mean, in no way, shape, form do we minimize any sort of violent language, violent talk in a workplace, really anywhere, but especially in a workplace set. I mean, take that extremely serious. Write it down, everything, and I mean, act on it as if they meant it. Any other folks on this situation? If we have folks, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, that's a part of your job, you have to be in a white person's residence. I know we have some black listeners that are self-employed who've called in before where they've had these sort of situations and they talk about the code that they have for being in that environment. But if we have any folks, that's a part of your job, being in a white person's residence, and you know, have had to alter your code accordingly, definitely give us a jingle and let us know. 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Did anybody else have a thought, comment on this situation? The race soldier.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. I wanted to make a couple of comments. A while back, I was trying to get in the queue. I think I missed it, but greetings to everybody. In regards to the young man who mentioned that he went to work on his corporate job I think he had the supervisor who hired him, and then he would go to dinner with him periodically. And then from the dinners, it came from the supervisor then asking very detailed questions about his leads and his work. One thing I would like to share that I think that is effective that I've done in working in those environments is I did not go to lunch with any of them. So my excuse was, oh, no, I'm fine. I packed my lunch. Because at those lunches or dinners, alcohol was always involved, and or they would always want to sit there and probe me and ask me very personal questions for some odd reason, because I never shared anything personal at work. So I would say one thing that I would recommend for him to try to remove himself, or maybe kind of hamper down on this person prodding him for the information, is do not put yourself in positions when possible where you're alone with those individuals. As far as the dinners, those are situations where they feel more comfortable to say and try to finesse information from you. And another thing that I would definitely do, I think he touched on this that I thought was interesting, the insight. It sounds as if he may have looked to hire someone who had more skill sets than himself, of which he could tap for the talent and the information. He will take that talent and information. I've had this happen to me. And he will present it as his own, and then will get rid of you as a result, so that way no one ever really realizes where the information comes from. And this has been a practice that I've witnessed, and I've been a victim of my information being stolen on the job. So I would definitely say just be aware and to minimize confrontation. I think the suggestions were great, just to use buckets and buckets of words, the industry standards, But to reveal to them all of your access points to the information you're receiving, I think that that would be detrimental to your job. But inevitably, do not be surprised if they suddenly begin to have problems with you as a result of you not revealing those contacts.
Ma'am, I just had a quick question. You were saying that you have your experience, the tackiness abounds at these luncheons. The alcohol, talked about that throughout the broadcast this evening and beyond. Have you experienced any problems where they say, oh, man, you're not fitting in with the culture and you're aloof. You don't come out to our luncheons with us so we can get to know you and feel like you're really, you know, enticed and really want to be a part of our team. Have you experienced those sort of accusations when you shun their lunch offerings?
What I find, I've had those situations where I'm the one in the office who returns from lunch on time, who's making sure I'm clocking in and out, making sure I'm following all the protocols. And I've had, like, the manager, who is a white male, approach me and try to disarm me and say, oh, well, you know, you don't have to worry. Everybody does it. You don't have to come right back from lunch. If you need to leave early, no problem. And then he felt the need at that point to insult me in the same instance and say, because when I first met you, I thought you were a bitch. And I'm like,
wow.
So, and at that point, I was taken aback in the conversation. And I did, at that point, I said to him, I said, so you mean to tell me that's why you've been mistreating me all of these months? And he looks at me dead in my face and goes, yeah, you know, and I really feel bad about it. But I knew this was all a stunt. What I figured it was, as a provocateur is what I call him. I think that was his last ditch effort to disarm me so that I would, like, go crazy and start cursing in the office possibly. So he could say, oh, see, I told you she was crazy. Because he would talk to all the people around me about me, but never say anything to me. And all of these people are white. It was mostly white males, one white woman. And I got to the point where I would tell them, I don't need to hear anything that's not work related, you know. And so at that point, you know, it's no fun. I'm not going to be the butt of all the jokes. I'm not going to be that vested in your nonsense. And so at that point, when he did refer to me as a bitch, I took that information. I went immediately to HR. I had a meeting with the president of the company. And I demanded that, one, I be removed from the building to go to another location. Because at first they were just telling me, oh, we'll just move you to a department in the building. At that point, I expressed I didn't feel safe. And of course, the president, he was a white man, and he turned, like, his face turned really red. He was upset of the fact that, you know, when they make these stern statements, they're like, oh, she's going to be able to do what she wants. So I requested to go to another location. And that came with a substantial pay increase, ironically. So the games that they play, especially in my experience being a female in a male-dominated field, it was a never-ending story. But I would definitely, I wasn't concerned. I know that the chatter, to answer your question, Gus, I'm sorry, but the chatter was, oh, she never goes to lunch. She never go to lunch with us. I go, oh, well, you know, I pack my lunch, or I'm just going to relax or read, or I always had something to the point where the expectation was that I wasn't going. And so even sometimes they wouldn't ask, and then other times, well, I know you're probably going to say no. I'm like, pretty much, you know, the routine. But at that point, I'm conditioning them to understand that I'm not going to be their entertainment, and I'm not going to be there to be poked and prodded. If it's seven people at the table, I'm the one answering all the questions. I can't enjoy my meal because everybody is wanting to be nosy and ask me questions or get armed with personal information that later could be used against me. So that is something that, even now, I've changed industries, and that's just something that I don't do. And in regards to, I had another comment, the young lady that shared
hang on one second.
The workplace, they always...
Hang on one second. I just wanted to make sure we didn't miss out. I will come back to make sure I get your other comment as well. Are there folks that we missed completely that didn't get an opportunity to share at all? Any folks that we missed completely that didn't get an opportunity to share? Oh, yikes. Was looking at the wrong page. All right, so the people that are on. Yes.
Greetings, everybody. I wanted to call in and talk about a chick that I work with, a young white female who I suspect to be a racist. And I just wanted some input, some advice on how to deal with the situation. It's like she's not angry or anything, but she's like over apologetic. Like every time I say something or, you know, anything, like I wouldn't even raise my voice. Or she doesn't even have to mess up. She's always apologizing. Like, I'm sorry this and I'm sorry that. And, you know, I'm sorry to say something wrong with it. And she works under me. I'm a supervisor. I thought about going like and reporting or something maybe or something like that, but I don't know how it came up, but she once told me a story that her boyfriend tied her up to a tree. I don't know if it's true. A boyfriend tied her up to a tree and had shot heroin up her arm and stuff like that. I don't know if that's true, but that might be the reason why, you know, she acts like that. But she's always apologizing, man, and it's starting to get irritating. Like something might come out of it, like negative. Like she might try to, you know, go and tell somebody, tell a higher up that I've done something to her, mistreated her, you know. I just wanted like some advice on how to deal with the situation. Should I, you know, get paperwork on it or, you know, talk to somebody? And also another situation too. It's an older lady. She doesn't work under me, but you know, she's my coworker. And I did what you said, Gus. I had went and reported her, like I went to her supervisor and reported, you know, of misbehavior. Like she, you know what I'm saying, she'll snatch paperwork out of my hand or, you know, just act real unprofessionally. And it doesn't even have to be anything to deal with me. Like, she, you know, I ain't do anything wrong. And she'll just be acting, you know, all crazy with me. You know, like I said, snatching paperwork, throwing paperwork, you know, just like she's going through a bad day. And I went to her aisle up and reported her. And how about her supervisor? You know, he agrees, like, hey, you know, she shouldn't be acting like that. That's not right. I'll go talk to her. I said, okay, how about this guy? He goes talk to her, and I'm like 10 feet away. I'm right there, and they like snarkling and giggling. You know, I don't hear exactly what they're talking about, but they, you know, give me like the side eye, just looking at me. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, so unprofessional. Like, I thought he was going to, you know, I probably should have asked for paperwork or something. But, yeah, that's two situations. The last weekend, I was listening in last weekend, and it was a chick, I don't know exactly what it was, a caller talking about the 10-day policy where, you know, you get 10 days, but if you use more than 8, you'll get in trouble, this and that. And that had tripped me up because we got something similar to where, like, if we get a sick day, we get 10 sick days, but if I call in at the last minute, like if I'm sick tomorrow, I call in, I can get written up. And I always thought that was like the, you know, the point of having a sick day, like it's an emergency. Like, but I got to schedule ahead of time, like a week ahead, like I'm going to be sick like next week or something, or I get in trouble. You know, they said a warning first and then you get written up. So, you know, that just, I guess it is, you know, white supremacy redefined on, you know, refined on the other side of the country. It's different over here, you know what I'm saying? But it's the same stuff, man. But that's all I want to say. You know, I just want some advice on, you know, like on the first situation, some advice and a second, you know. And thank you for taking my call, man. That's it.
Much obliged. So the first situation, well, that was read in Nevada last week, unless my memory is failing again, who was talking about the sick days where they will give you, I think she would say like, okay, they'll give you 10 sick days. But then it'll be like, now, if you take 7 sick days, that's going to be a firing. It's like, well, why would you? Anyway, that was read in Nevada. So seems like maybe that is a standard way of them practicing white supremacy on the job. So the first situation, were you asking for feedback? White woman suspected racist. You're her supervisor. Put that in quotes. She's saying, I'm sorry a lot. On the job, I was thinking, I guess one, you could, I don't know if you tried just at speaking to her directly and saying, you know, you say I'm sorry or you apologize a lot on the job. If you could try to work on minimizing that so that we could just get things done and not have you apologizing every 5 minutes. We're coworkers or whatever. We're on the same team. Let's try and get things done. No need for apologies every 5 minutes. Let's just get work done. You can, I don't
know. It's like every time I, like, in every conversation, like, every time I talk to her, it's like more than, you know, every 5 minutes. Like, I wouldn't even be reprimanding her. And she'd be like, oh, sorry. It's like a bad habit. And I try to say, hey, you didn't do anything wrong. Why are you saying sorry? And, you know, she just doesn't say anything back. But, yeah, it seemed like, you know, it could be tomorrow or next week. I can go up there one day and it's just, you know, I had a police waiting on me or something saying I did something bad. That's how I feel. So, yeah, it's ridiculous, man.
That could certainly be the case anyway, whether she's doing her public apology or apologizing or not. That is, we are still on the plantation. Did any folks have other suggestions? I guess if you try telling her directly and she's still going to do it, any suggestions on how you would address the apologizing white woman? That was scenario one.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Codified software developer.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Gus. Good evening, the callers and listeners. For this young lady, I would put this at the same level as weeping white woman. So I would be very wary of this white woman. I would not engage. If she apologizes, I wouldn't even address the apology. Because it seems like she's using it in the same way that a white woman would use tears. And who knows, maybe she's building a case against you, and she's creating paperwork against you so that she could say she did something incorrect. So I think you should go with your gut on this one. I would not address the apologies anymore. If I had to tell her that she wasn't doing her job correctly, if she apologized, the best she could get from me was, okay. And not keep just moving, because she wants attention. The more attention you give her, the more she can manipulate you into doing other things. I don't know how good of a employee she is in the first place. That could be something else. She could be just trying to get by on her white femaleness. I know that's not a word, but she could be just trying to get by. She's playing on your sentiment and your emotions. I would be very wary of this person. With that, I'll mute my line. Thanks.
Thank you.
Indeed. Any other suggestions from callers? Appreciate that, codified software developer. Any other suggestions from callers for how you would deal with the apologizing white woman?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to say good evening to everyone.
Oh, Mr. Williams, Mr. Edward Williams, counter-racism.com.
Oh, you just going to bust me out like that? Okay. As for the apologizing white woman, I would start apologizing. I would start apologizing for any and everything in my interaction with her.
Apologizing. Start apologizing back, huh?
Oh, yeah. Even in meetings with some of the leadership, quote unquote.
I ain't never thought of that.
I would make sure that they heard me apologizing to her.
Honestly, my next step was going to try to get her fired. That was the only solution that was able to come to mind. I could try to get her fired before anything happened. I hope I don't have to resort to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can do that too. And in the interim, you know, while you're in the process of doing that, what I would do is also to apologize. I apologize for any and everything. If I speak to her in the morning, she don't hear me. I would say, I'm sorry. Did you hear me? I spoke to you. I'm sorry if you didn't hear me. Let me speak to you again. How are you doing today?
you know, and make sure other people heard me do that. So what that would do is that would neutralize, you know, her trying to bring something against me. That was the only thing that people could say about that. You say, oh, you sure you're talking about Mr. Williams?
Yeah, that's another thing.
He's a very nice person. He's very polite, very courteous. When he makes mistakes, he always apologizes. You know, so the more people I could get to have that kind of consensus, the better it works to my advantage.
Yeah, thank you, man. And yeah, other folks do be like listening, like from afar. Still thinking I'm abusing the girl. How much she be apologizing? Like she always looking down, like you know that I guess that self-esteem issue type. Like she's in her early 20s. Like I'm sorry, looking at the paperwork. I'm sorry, and I'm like I ain't even say you did anything bad. But from afar, you were like eating on her or something. If you like just overheard our conversation.
And that's not by chance. You know, she'll say it just loud enough so that people can hear, but not so loud that they'll think that she's under distress.
Yeah.
See what I mean? I mean, it's not by chance. And so what I would do is to start doing the same thing so that I garner that consensus that I'm a nice guy, very courteous, very polite. I admit my mistakes. You know, even in some instances, go so far as to ask for forgiveness. Now, see, a lot of non-white people ain't gonna be able to do that. Because you know, it takes a certain amount of humbling yourself in order to do that, while at the same time you're on code. So you're thinking, you're planning, you're garnering that consensus. So you don't have to be in your feelings in order to do that. You know, you just stay on code, go with the plan, go with the program.
Now, are you talking about like a joking around, or are you talking about like dead?
No. Like, no, I never joke around on the job. And matter of fact, I was talking to someone one day. I was working at NASA. Now, I know that sounds a lot like massa, but I was working at NASA. I was talking to someone. We were walking down the corridor. And one of the higher level executives was walking past us. And the person asked me about something. And I stopped in the hallway and they stopped. And I said, no, I never kid. I never kid around. I'm always focused on the objective. And before that executive got to the door, he stopped and turned around and looked at me. See, with the look on his face, like, you know, who is this nigga in here at NASA? You know?
Wow.
Talking about he's serious. He never joke around. He never kid around. You know? And me and the person I was talking to, we just turned around, kept walking, because he didn't say anything. He just turned around and kept walking. So no, not by any means. I am not talking about in a joking manner. And that's why I say a lot of non-white people are not going to be able to do that, because it really takes a level of humbling yourself to do that. You don't have to feel bad, grieve about it. You just got to know what you're doing when you're doing it. And just follow the program.
Makes sense.
I'd like to make a comment about the person that has to work in, you know, a white person's residence. I don't know if they're still on the line. No, Gus, you asked the question. So the first thing I would do is to stay calm. That's rule number one. Rule number two is see rule number one. You have to stay calm in those kind of situations. Somebody made a comment about or a suggestion about having to go out, you know, to their truck, their car, their vehicle. Excellent suggestion. I would do the exact same thing. Make a comment about having to go out to a vehicle and get something. I would get in the truck and drive down the street. The next thing I would do is call 911. That's the next thing I do. And after I got off the phone with them, I would call my manager. I would explain the situation to my manager, told him I called 911. I don't feel safe in the area. What should I do? Always end with a question. What should I do? And then let my manager tell me, and I sit there on the phone, and I listen to him tell me. And I'd say, okay, excellent suggestion. That's exactly what I'll do. That puts me on the offense. The system of racism, white supremacy keeps non-white people on the defensive all the time. So we have to come up with code to put us on the offense. Not to make ourselves feel better, but to, in a sense, give everybody the understanding that I am not on the defense. I mean, everybody, including myself. Follow the instructions of others if they're constructive. In this case, my manager telling me what exactly I need to do. And I let him know that's an excellent suggestion. It's exactly what I'm going to do. If they want me to leave, I leave. If they want me to sit there in the truck till the police officers get there, I sit there in the truck till the police officers get there. Because I'm down the street. I'm not in front of the person's house any longer. I'm in a semi-safe place. Semi. Checking the mirrors every 2 seconds. You know, but I would not stay in that house at all. I know other people gave that same suggestion. Leave. That's an excellent suggestion. And that's what I would do.
What if your manager says, now, wait a minute, Mr. Williams, you jumped the gun here. Who told you to call 911 and then call us? Like the police are already there and, you know, you've blown this and made this into a bigger deal than it already was. Who told you to call 911 before you called us?
Well, sir, ma'am, I feared for my safety. I feared for my life. In the instances where I'm on the job and I fear for my life, should I call you? Are you the person that's going to come over and take command of the situation? If you are, please let me know. And in the future, that is the procedure I will follow. See, this is chess. It ain't checkers. You know, so if he puts himself in a position to be my protector where I'm at work, wherever I may be, then okay. Yeah, we'll go with that. But chances are he's not going to put himself into that position. You know, you can get back to the office, check the policies and whatnot, see what they say, see if you acted in accordance with policy. And if you did, you have that on your side as well.
Any of the folks working in someone else's residence, if that's or specifically if you know you have to be in a white person's residence, non-white person as well, but I would definitely be familiar with that section of your policy and procedure manual. If something happens where you feel like your safety has been compromised, this, and I mean, you should like know that memorized first day on the job before the first time I have to go out to somebody's house. I know what the policy and procedure is on this one. Anything happens, bingo, you do this, 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 and this. I don't need a refresher. I don't need anything. I know exactly what it is. That would be big time suggestion for anyone working in that capacity. Great suggestions, Mr. Edward Williams, founder, counter-racism.com. Been a guest on the program many times and author of the book, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy, that has lots of great details on workplace racism or suggestions, ways non-white people can counter racism in the workplace. Asking questions. Just heard a couple great questions right there. Asking questions comes up regularly in the book, and keeping your composure. I think we talk about that on this broadcast all the time. The importance that if you cannot keep your composure, the rest of counter racism doesn't really matter. Other folks, any other suggestions? We had several different scenarios. Did we have any callers that we missed totally who had commentary they wanted to make sure that they got in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Black Nose in here. I missed a lot of the previous callers. I did hear the situation about being in someone's house and being threatened by a white person. My experience, it's best to leave the residence, especially if you are not in employment for yourself. It's best to leave because you can leverage the fact that you felt you were in danger with the situation, and it would be very hard to fire you under those circumstances. And even if they did, you could collect unemployment. And personally, I just wouldn't put myself in danger for my job in that way. So I would just leave. Now, I wanted to comment on some things that happened with me. I've been gone for a while. On the job, I have noticed that white people are not ignorant about so-called race. They just don't. They know you're black. I know that sounds kind of weird, but they know what it means to be black and to be white. So on certain occasions, they will refer to you as a black person. Oh, yeah, that black person over there. And a lot of white people try to act like they don't like calling you black, but they know exactly when to call you a black person. Very kind of weird. And we went back to the Caribbean restaurant again, and some coworkers called it monkey meat. The Caribbean food, they call it monkey meat. One co-worker called it monkey meat. That was just interesting. And I have a question. Has anyone, like, do white people call you brother at work? I just want to ask anyone, because I've been, like, white people, they call me brother, and I don't know how I feel about it. I kind of see what Gus is saying. Before, I used to kind of say to myself, I don't see the issue with it, but white people calling me brother every day, I feel some kind of way about it. Thank you.
Whites do use the term brother here in the Seattle area regularly, and they say it in yoga class all the time, and I hate it even more when they say it. And the thing is, generally, when they say it, they will catch me when I'm in a pose. They won't say it like when we're just sitting down talking like, hey, brother. They won't be like that. It'll be, we'll be like in inversions, upside down, and they'll come by. Oh, awesome job, brother. Awesome job. Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. Yes. And I would put that in the same category when we've had people who've talked about whites on the job will use slang. I think we had the caller last week who said the white woman said, I'll give you $50. That's the way she said it, $50. I think we had some other people. Hey, what's up, partner? Hey, what's up, pimp? That I'd put all of that in the same category where you just this is what you think the Negro slang of the day is. So I'm just going to reserve that anytime any of our dark employees come around and I can bust out all of my ghetto vernacular for all of that in the tacky. These are just acts of racism category. And I think we've even given out some suggestions on stopping some of these, doing the same thing, asking questions. You know, you can even come and do it real slow, watching your verbals. I've noticed that you don't call anyone else here brother when you greet them and just pay attention. Because a lot of times, or I would say almost all the time, that's what it is. They're not doing that with anybody else. Hey, brother, what's happening? What's in all that nonsense? Why is that? And sometimes that question alone can be enough to stop all of that cold. Do we have any other folks that we missed totally that had a hand up? Anybody that we missed completely?
Hi, Gus.
Greetings, B in Toronto.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Right poorly.
Right poorly myself, too. So, yes, I had four quick things to mention. In response to working in a white person's residence, because of the nature of the work that I do, sometimes it requires me having to work in a private home. So there was one situation where I'm the only person. So it's a one-to-one support, and I'm working with a client, and in one of the things that I always have to be wary of is the behavior. The client that I was introduced to was fairly new, so I wasn't quite certain as to the extent of behavior that the client had. However, with this particular client, we go off in shifts. So the person before me would give me a shift change about how everything went for the shift. They would have done the site check to make sure that all the knives are put away and or any other sharps are put away, and that the household is safe. If for this particular client, their parents had already died, so it's mainly just outside support coming in. To ensure that the client is kept safe and that the client is being fed and cleansed and what have you, the daily life skills. So one day, this client was triggered by goodness knows what and decided to go into the drawer and take out a knife and actually charged at me. So luckily, I was able to disarm the client, so I was able to eventually get the knife and as a result move away and call 911, and I informed my manager what had occurred, and the manager was quite disapproving of the fact that I've disarmed the client and contacted 911. The safety management training that we have requires two people to actually do the actual restraint if needed. But because I'm only one person at the residence home, I had to naturally do some modifications. So then when I had given my report, my incident report of what occurred, and I submitted it, the manager then said, oh, after reading your incident report, I didn't realize how bad the situation was. I thought the client was trying to come after you with a butter knife, and you know, not with a sharp stainless steel butcher knife. I was like, well, that's what happened. That's the reason why I called 911. I wouldn't call 911 for a butter knife. So, the main thing that I wanted to also mention is that, say if you were to get any person in this situation, if they were to be in this situation, definitely call 911 if you do not feel safe. It doesn't matter. Make sure that you have a report so there's some kind of documentation. The second thing that I'll also mention is if you get injured at any point, because I did get injured having to do the restraint myself to make sure that I can, you know, go home breathing to my back to my family. Make sure that if you have a workers' compensation type of plan within your state, I know that in Toronto we have what's known as the Worker Safety Information Board, or known as WSIB. Make sure that when you've completed that you make sure you get a copy. And the reason why I say this is because after I had written the incident report, that incident report should have been attached to the WSIB form, and it should have been sent. But somehow the human resources, and they've never interviewed me about the situation, it was purely through the managers. So for some reason, when I finally got a copy, it was a completely different story. It made it seem as if I was at fault and I had somehow triggered the client, which was not true and wasn't reflective of the incident report. So if you find that, again, there's anything that is not true under that workers' compensation form to submit so that they can use it for adjudication and then eventually dispersal of the funds if approved, make sure that you get a rebuttal. For WSIB, it's a Form 6. That's a rebuttal form. To dispute anything that the employers may have put down that is untrue. So check within your state if you have a workers' compensation benefit, if that is available, or if it's through your insurance benefits, if that's available. See how you can refute any false claim that that your employer may have submitted. So that's number one. Number two was, I was just completing my assignment at the school, my contract rather, at the school, and the teacher had put on the Tom and Jerry Show classics. For those who may be familiar with the old Tom and Jerry shows, they're extremely racist. So with the teacher, she had gone in and went off to do something else, wasn't monitoring what the children were watching. I incidentally, having to do one-to-one with one of the students there, looked up and saw that they were showing depictions of Sambo. And in another situation, they were showing another depiction of an Aboriginal person scalping Tom, the cat. So I immediately went to the teacher and I said, look, this is racially offensive. You need to shut this down immediately because we can't have the students exposed to this. So she shut it down, and I went and I informed my supervisor. Lo and behold, when I did some more research, because I wanted to attach article substantiating my concerns around this, Amazon.com actually has a racism disclaimer on Tom and Jerry old cartoons. So the reason why I'm mentioning this is that in the event that they should, you know, just put on any material in the schools, if you happen to be working in the school or in the hospital facility or, you know, anything other than a private home situation, definitely look up onto Huffington Post or look up under bbc.co.uk. They have the articles on the Tom and Jerry shows and Amazon.com having the racism disclaimer informing customers if they happen to stream those shows that they are racist and as it was wrong in the past, is still wrong today. So that's something that can be used to add some more to substantiate the argument. So at the end of the day, what happened with that was that the principal apologized to me, of which I mentioned to the principal, well, it's not really me that needs to be apologized to. It needs to be also the students who were exposed to it that needs to be apologized to. And just to ensure that the school staff monitors what they're going to show the students. The third thing was, my son had informed me that the Peel District School Board had, for a number of years, what's known as a blacklist. And the blacklist is a list of all Black students that, for some reason, they feel are disadvantaged. And ways of how to, instead of using it as a means to have more access to different programs, it was used as justification to keep them out of different programs. So in the Peel region in Canada, and that encompasses Mississauga, Brampton, those areas, it will be really interesting how it plays out because it's subject under review right now. So if anyone's interested in finding out more information, just look up the under cbc.ca, Peel District School Board blacklist. I believe one of the parents are actually taking it to the Ontario Human Rights Council for review and to see if there can be any compensation out of that. And then the fourth thing that I just wanted to say, just to wrap it up real quick, is, just again, go back to self-care, making sure that you're making time for yourself. Our time is cannibalized under this system of white supremacy. Make sure that you take time for yourself to regenerate and regroup. Make sure that you're eating healthy. Make sure that you're getting appropriate sleep. Make sure that you're doing the exercises that you need to do to make yourself strong, and also to have that extended to friends and families as well. For those that support, for those that who do not support, well, again, you may have to reevaluate your circle of influence as to whether or not it is worth having the negativity around. But of course, there is the empathy and takes time, but if you find over a great period of time that it's that person's not really gravitating and it's actually pulling you down, then rather than have them hold on to you like an anchor where you drown, sometimes you got to cut that anchor off and let it sink. And that's it. I'll leave my line. Thank you for listening.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. Self-care hugely important for victims of white supremacy. Do we have any folks that we missed completely? Have a hand up. We have not heard from you at all. Caller in Florida. Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Yes. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. There were a few incidents I wanted to share. The first two are from our passport section in the department. We had a person file an incident report because, and this was a white woman, the Black female, she was taking her picture, and the projector background that we used to take the passport pictures, it fell off and it almost hit her in the head, but she used her hand, I guess, instinctively. She didn't know which side it was coming down on, and it badly damaged her hand. So it looks like they were trying to make excuses as to how it fell out. But, white people, human resources. And the thing was that it was the Black female that saw it happen, and it was almost like they were trying to, trying to figure out how I can say this, maybe, I guess, coach or kind of, in a way, coerce her into making it seem like that's not what she saw, I guess. At least that's how I'm interpreting it. But this is last Friday this happened, and there was two other things. There was a black female that she was making commentary on how, I guess, dark her picture was. I guess she went to CVS pharmacy, I guess, to get her passport picture done, but I guess she wasn't, I guess, satisfied with it, or it wasn't meeting the criteria to get her passport application completed. So I had took a picture, and we were, I guess, looking at the printout of it, and I guess she was comparing it. She was saying, oh, wow, you know, this is better. You know, I knew I wasn't that black. This and that. So I am black, but I'm not that black. So it was like she was trying to get some of the white people in the vicinity to, I guess, make commentary on what she's saying. And they didn't really say too much. And I didn't really make much comment either. So I just ended up giving her pictures. And, you know, I said, yes, ma'am, here you go. And they'll get you checked out right up front. There was a, I guess, what people call a mixed young person, young male. And he got a white parent. This is very interesting because she was saying, she was, I guess, somewhat bragging on him or something like that, because she was saying, yeah, you know, we were just in the Dominican Republic, and, you know, people were mistaking him for being Dominican because he knew how to speak Spanish. He was like, no, like, what are they talking about? He's mixed and this and that. And, you know, saying, look at how curly his hair is, almost like she's fetishizing him. The black female, she was, I guess, maybe fascinated by the hair follicles. And, you know, just very interesting observation on that. And very, very smart young guy. But his mom, the highly racist suspect, or maybe just admitted racist, maybe, or maximum racist aggression. The next one is, there was a customer that came in, and I don't know if this was discussed as well as, like, when people try and give you tips or money, and at least in my job workplace, when you, I guess, do a good job or a favorable job and helping the customer, this old guy and his wife, when I was finished with the customer, like, I gave him his copies, and, like, he gets up, and he pulls this giant wad of money out of his pocket, and he takes a 10 out, and he tosses it on the desk and says, hey, you can, you know, go get you some lunch. You know, I thought very racist. Some people, I guess, may say paternalistic, condescending. So it's a policy where they say, hey, if anybody, any customer offers you any kind of money, you know, you just come bring it to us. So I took it to supervisors. And I don't know if that part has ever been discussed. My next one is, there was a thing I noticed about, like, the child support hearing officer. Now, the term is called hearing officer, and this is a black male. I think he's in his maybe late 70s, and he's a professor at the University of Florida. And his intern at the courthouse, but his judicial assistant has to go and pursue other white judges on other floors to get his order signed. So it's like, how can this person, I guess he does the child support hearings every week, and his assistant has to go and knock on the doors of white judges to get their signatures. And I'm thinking, and this has been happening for years too. A black female notified me of this in the child support department. And the last one is the white woman, the infamous warden. She is at it again. I get a email earlier this week about, I guess, taking out some kind of bin or whatever, recycling bin. And the my white female, a white woman supervisor, she's asking me about this because, you know, they're definitely not informing her about this stuff. So there's a pattern this year of the white people on the other side of the building asking me to, I guess, do certain jobs that don't necessarily fall in line with what I'm supposed to be doing, not any of my responsibility. So it finally comes up, and I right then and there, you know, I just said, like, can you please give me a minute or two? He said, oh, sure, you know, just, you know, come speak to me about it. So I get myself well-grounded. I gather my thoughts. How am I going to articulate and interpret what this email is saying? Because, like, number one, it starts back from June the 14th, and this email is being addressed to somebody else from another department. They're not going to have my name on it. And weeks later, my name is being brought into it by the race soldier woman asking, could I take the bin downstairs when they've already arranged for somebody else to do it? So I explained to my supervisor what was going on, and she pretty much, long story short, ended up responding to her saying that, hey, you know, he says that this isn't his job, and he only does the other recycling bins that's green, and can you have another person over there? And she listed some of the other guys' names or male workers' names over there, like, could they do the job? And what was suspicious was that she was saying, like, hey, you know, she never responded. But I walked past this person, like in the flesh, and she tells me, you know, well, don't worry about taking down the recycling. The people have already come, because we have a company that comes and empties the bins, the ones that we have that are full, so we can get an empty replacement. Okay, so, and later on that day, the emails continue to go on, saying, like, hey, nobody took this. And then she responds and says, well, you know what, I'll just do it on Friday, which is tomorrow. Okay, so I'm saying this in context because this is symptoms of retaliatory behavior, because I said, you know, this is not my job, basically. She sends out an email that says she's going to need the truck or the vehicle that I utilize to take the mail every day, pretty much. So she says she's going to need it from 2 to 4. Now, I take the mail, and I have a demanding, time-sensitive job. I take the mail around like 4:15, 4:20. So I'm noticing at 3:30 yesterday that the truck isn't back. 4 o'clock hits, the truck isn't back. 4:17, the truck still isn't back. So I go to see the administrative assistant, black female, and she said, well, you know, she said she would be back at 4:30, and apparently the excuse was she got caught in the rain, so they had to call someone from the other building to come pick me up to take the mail. And by the time I get back, the white woman has arrived, the truck is back, and it's parked out back. But the most venomous part of this is this morning, she apparently didn't bring the keys back. So we're trying to, me and my supervisor, trying to get the keys. And apparently the lady, she got the keys with her. Okay. And at the last minute, she comes in and says, well, you know, I brought the truck back, and I'll just go and park it somewhere else because they got complaints about the truck being improperly parked next to someone else's vehicle, and they were complaining about it. So I said, well, should I wait for her to bring the keys back? And she says, well,
I don't know, because I don't know if you wanted to go ahead and meet her down there. I decided I'll just wait. So she comes back and says, well, you know, she left the keys down there. She left the keys in the cup holder, and she didn't bring the key back. Ultimate form of racist activity right there. So she left the car unattended, unlocked, brand new vehicle, total contempt. And I just thought I'd share that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
The courthouse in Florida, man. Everybody, we need to make a field trip. Go down there, get some Florida OJ. It sounds like this is like northern Florida, not the cool part. I was going to say we could go to Disney World or whatever, but if we're in northern Florida, like, man. But we can at least learn a lot about white supremacy, racism, and white women on the job. There were so many, like, my God. The first situation where the projector fell, that's why I said in so many situations the talking bad about black people and name and calling black people is totally incorrect, because you can take a situation like that. The black female is trying to do the correct thing. Like, I saw the projector fall, could have killed this woman here who came in for her photograph, trying to report what she saw. And you got suspected race soldiers. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not what you saw. Didn't you see her take the broom and smack the projector? That's what you saw. Didn't she do that? Didn't she knock it down? That's what you saw. It was up there tight. It was screwed in, and she came in and she grabbed all the time to just come in. And oh, no, 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 no. And I mean, any kind of way. It could be, oh, well, we got that raise, you know, that you were trying to get, or that promotion you were looking at, or anything to, no, this is the way we want you to say. And they do this all the time in tons of different context with the car situation. We talk so often about white people wasting your time, wasting our time and energy, and sabotaging us on the job. I was even waiting for it to be, oh, there was no rainstorm. It was dry as a desert. And she just made all that up about, you know, what caused her to be late. But that sort of taking vehicles and doing things to mess black people up on the job, or even just so that it wastes lots of their time. Oh, I have seen that continuously. I've experienced it myself. I think we've talked about listeners. And I think frequently when it's not like they're calling you a nigger, right? He didn't say that. When it's not acute things, it's just wasting your time. I think frequently we do not process it. Yes, this is a major act of white supremacy racism right here. I've been on jobs where that's a fireable offense. You have a vehicle and you leave the keys in the car for somebody that can just walk up and steal. Like, oh my gosh, in addition to messing people up at work and what have you, like, I have worked with, hey, that pink slip, get out of here, you know, tough break, but got to be responsible about, you know, company vehicles, company property. We are getting close to the end. Are there any callers we missed totally? Anybody that we've not heard from at all who dialed in with a hand up? Do we get everybody, or do we miss anybody? Get everybody? Grant. We'll assume folks are good. There was a female caller. You were giving your commentary about not doing the luncheons and having not really backfired on you too much to make sure that you cut down on the white tackiness at work. I think you said you had one more comment that you wanted to share. If you're still with us, ma'am, did you want to get your additional comments in? Might have lost her. I was going to make sure I did not forget her. Might have lost her. Hopefully we can get her additional comment for next Thursday. Was there anybody else who had final comment they wanted to make sure they got in before we wrap things up?
Yes. Hi, Gus.
Is this me? Oh, I heard two different
Sorry. Books. I can hold off if you'd like.
Well, how about that?
Okay, I just want to quickly say that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gus.
Proceed, Ivy.
Okay, I just wanted to quickly say that I agree with everybody who said about the person who was working in that person's residence, that I would just leave immediately, and calling the cops is a great idea as well. And I'll mute my line. Thanks, B. Thanks, Gus.
for sure. B in Toronto.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much. Yes, the other thing that I wanted to mention was I was noticing at work that in terms of the terms around the term white or the word white, it's from what I've observed, it seems to have this hypnotic effect. I don't know if anyone else has noticed that, especially when it's white women talking to white children. You know, the way that it would come out is like it's the way that the tone and the cadence, how it goes along. So things, terms that I've, or the sentences I've heard was when I was working at the hospital at one time, a nurse was saying to one of the white patients, "Oh, everything is clean and white," or listening to the teacher talking to the white students, "Oh, look at the beautiful white swan." And there's, it's just like the, it's, there's this, it's like this hypnotic type of, I don't know if anyone knows much about hypnotism, but there's a certain way in which you speak that can unlock certain things in the psyche, and it seems to carry that type of it seems to go along those lines. So that's something that I've observed, and I'll be monitoring it some more and keeping yourself, your callers and listeners posted on that. The other thing too is I'm noticing in the schools as well that the fact that the N-word is not used as much, but what I noticed is, like, for instance, one of the kids who was white was teasing a non-white student. And so they'd say things like, "Oh, well, this white crayon just looks better than the rest. And I love the way how this white glue looks." And I'm just saying that, you know, white is better in terms of the glue and the crayon. So it's, I was noticing that the non-white student was getting pretty agitated. So I nipped that in the bud, and I was saying, "Well, you know, all colors are beautiful, and regardless, because it's been made for everybody, so all colors are beautiful," and nipped it in the bud from there. But yes, so I've noticed that especially white children have become more crafty as to how they would abuse non-white children. And again, this goes to the teachings from their white parents. So thank you for listening. I leave my line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. You can let us know how your research results unfold. Studying whites. I think I've heard Mr. Fuller recommend that a time or two. We'll be here tomorrow, 7 p.m. I think we might have disrupted some of our book club listeners last week. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, my favorite book all time. We are about halfway through. We are 1 hour earlier because of aforementioned teacher training. So it's 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific tomorrow, Friday evening. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, the study session number 9. But before then, any final words folks need to insert before we conclude the broadcast?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I forgot to mention there was a one that happened a while ago, just a quick one, Gus. There was a conversation with a sheriff bailiff. He was speaking to a black bailiff. And, you know, I guess they were talking about generation stuff and like AGE. And he says, "Guess when I was born?" And then the black male, he couldn't guess the right date. And he says, I was born on the same day Dr. King was assassinated. So I overheard that. And that's all that I have.
Interesting.
be interested as to what the context or why he felt the need to bring that out. It almost feels like there's some sort of racist joke waiting when he mentions that to other whites, but I might be reading too much into it, as they say. We will make sure call it a broadcast. We did our 3 hours. Again, we'll be here tomorrow 1 hour earlier, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, favorite book all time, in the compensatory call-in this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Much obliged for everyone who dialed in. Mr. Edward Williams, founder, counter-racism.com. Excellent source for counter-racist material. I think we got Ivy here. She won cash prize for her definition of racism at counter-racism.com. If you have questions, gripes, complaints, can't find something in the archives, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have commentary about workplace racism, we can just read it for next week. So untiljustice@gmail.com, and we will share your thoughts. Again, it is summertime. Weekend coming up. Go out, have a blast. I won't have the free time, but in spirit, I will be having fun. You should still be codified under the system of white supremacy. That means, in my view, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We heard the Grand Sister's voice in the broadcast this evening. I know Dr. Welsing would certainly co-sign wholeheartedly on sobriety for black people. Let's do everything that we can to preserve our brain computers, our self-care as best we can, so that we can think and come up with great new concepts, potential solutions to the problem, the system of white supremacy, racism. In addition to remaining sober, each and every time we are in a vehicle, we should be sober and buckled up. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.